No More Soggy Bottoms with Anne and Claire.
Underproofed, overcooked, overbaked, underproofed, overkneaded, wet, bad.
I need to calm down. That's what I need to do. I need to calm down. Yeah. I just want baked bread. That's all I want. Come on.
Oh, come on, balls. Come on, balls. Cook nicely.
Welcome back to No More Soggy Bottoms with Anne and Claire.
This week was Bread Week and we have a special treat in store for you.
We went to Greystones to find out how to make sourdough bread with Gavin Murphy.
Because bread takes so long to make, Gavin is actually cooking a sourdough he pre-prepared, so we'll actually find out how to make the bread while it's in the oven.
We started by asking Gavin about the temperature of the oven.
Temperature is whatever the max your house oven will go to. So minus 250, and that's been on for an hour. So you could probably do it for half an hour, but you want to get the temperature so hot that the glass is the same temperature, and you want to put your Dutch oven in there as well, because if you put a cold vessel in, it will just suck all the temperature out of the oven. So you want everything the exact same temperature, so when the bread goes in, it takes all the heat.
Okay. So the Dutch oven is like made of cast iron, is it?
Has to be cast iron, yeah.
If you
use anything like aluminium and stuff, it'll just fold. It needs to be really, really sturdy. I've used other things. If it has any plastic on it, the plastic will instantly melt. Like I even use, like even that look. Cloth will melt when you touch it. Like it's super hot, so you need to be very careful taking everything into the oven.
So did you have to breeze it or anything? Or just
don't grease it. It's so hot that it's just going to seal the bread instantly.
Wow. Okay.
So you turn it upside down. Give it a little shake.
Oh.
Like that. Make sure you don't touch the sides. And the reason you score it is to allow it to open when it rises. Otherwise, it bursts out the side. So it's a really sharp blade. And you just run it straight across. And then drape back on top. So you want that completely sealed.
So that's,
the reason you're using the Dutch oven is that it creates steam. So when all the moisture evaporates from this, it hits the top and creates steam inside. If you put that into a dry oven, it would just burn the crust.
Okay.
The other way you could do this is just put it on a flat tray, if you don't have a Dutch oven. And then you could just put a tray on the bottom of the oven. Pour water into it as soon as you put it in, which would create steam in the oven. But doing that for your oven, if it's not a steam oven, can be a little bit bad for the elements and stuff.
Okay.
So once you put it in, you turn it straight down. I turn mine down to about 200. It's 220, 230, but the element on this oven, because I've done it so many times, is actually a lot higher than what it reads. So I know mine's about 200. And then you just pop a timer on for... So I do mine for 22 minutes. And then I take the lid
22,
off.
22, that's really precise. Yeah.
Well, that's, I've done it for different times, but so 22 minutes, because I used to do it for 19, 20 minutes and then take the lid off, and it would be longer without the lid, but then it would give quite a charred crust. Mm. And Marlene doesn't like when it's really burnt.
Okay.
And I don't really like it either, because it gives that, especially when you toast it afterwards, it doesn't become very nice because it gets extra charred. So we like ours, like, we leave it fresh when it's straight out of the oven. So within about an hour and a half, 2 hours, and still warm, just with some butter, it's amazing.
Ooh,
so you just dust it with a little bit of flour and put it straight in. So while that's in there, 22 minutes, we'll start a fresh loaf. So this is exactly how I would start in the morning time.
Okay.
So I would feed my starter. I'd feed my starter the night before.
Some people give their starter a name because it's actually alive.
They do, and I let my first one die.
Oh,
I felt
that's
awful.
Wow,
kind of felt like I should.
Sorry for your trouble.
maybe we should name it now. What do you think?
What do you want to name it, Sienna?
I don't know.
What do we name the starter?
I don't know.
Is it a boy or a girl? You think?
I think it's a boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do we call him?
Fred Cook.
Do you like that name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fred. Fred is now the name of our starter. So this is essentially just water and flour.
Yeah.
So to start this is just water and flour, equal measures. It takes about 8 or 9 days. You just empty some out and feed it the same amount every day. So what I do is, because this has been going now for a couple of months, I leave mine in the fridge if I'm not going to bake. So it will last at least a week, up to even 2 weeks in the fridge. And then you'll just need to feed it once or twice before you use it again. So I had this fed yesterday, put it in the fridge overnight, took it out this morning. There's 100 grams of starter.
Mm-hmm.
100 grams of water, 100 grams of flour. So it's always the same measurement if you
have.
And then, so by tomorrow, technically I could have, so there's 300 grams there, I could have 900 grams of starter the next time I feed it.
Okay.
It would then be not 2.7 kilos of starter. So like very quickly you can build your starter up to a huge amount. And that starter could last me for the rest of my life if I look after it. I'll show you now the flours you use is very different. I started very recently using a very strong white flour. Okay. Oh, I used to always use strong white. This is very strong.
But still, it's Tesco, so it's readily available.
Yeah,
obviously.
And this is a Canadian one, and it actually absorbs way more water. It's higher in gluten content. So when I used this as a straight substitute for the organic strong white flour, it became so stiff because it just soaked up all the water and I could hardly knead it. So I had to actually add at least another 5% to 10% more water to actually make it malleable. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we start off, we're going to do 650 grams of water is what I use for a kilo of flour. Perfect. So you always base it off the flour content. So if I'm going to use a kilo of flour, so that's your 100%. You do about 60 to 60, when you hear people talk about hydration, they say, oh, it's 80% hydration or it's 70% hydration. That's the amount of water you use in relation to the amount of flour. So I have a I have a full kilo of flour is what I know I'm going to use. So I'm going to put 600 grams, and 600 grams is 600 mils.
Yeah.
It's the exact same measurement. So I'm going to put 600 in because I need to keep 50 back to add on later when I do the salt. So this first process is going to be water, flour and starter. And then we're going to have to leave it for 10 minutes. And that's called an auto-lease period. So that just means it allows the flour and the water to combine together. And it makes it much easier to knead when you add the salt in. So the first process, so it's 600 grams. Mm-hmm. 602. Take a tiny bit out.
And it's 602. How precise do you have to be?
Well, he just took two grams out.
Yeah, pretty precise. I mean, you could probably, you know, You could, if it was that, like that, 599, 600, that's okay.
Okay.
But if you, instead of 600, if you winged it and did 675...
You'd be in trouble.
Your whole mixture would be really, really soft.
Okay.
When it sits in the basket, when you take it out, it would just completely collapse into. So we have 600 there, and I'm going to pour 200 grams. I used to use 250, and I found it was a little bit too wet. So I used 200 grams of my mixture. So you just pour it in. So we know it's at 600, so we want that to get to 800. And when you see when it hits the water...
It's floating.
See if it just floats instantly?
Oh, yeah.
So it's full of air.
It's quite nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a nice texture.
And it can be a little bit looser. So we're at exactly 800 grams now. So that's 200 grams we've added. That will now, depend on, if I wanted to use that again tonight, I would just empty off enough that I go to 100 grams.
Okay.
And then add 100 water, 100 flour, feed it, and use it the next day. If you're not using it every day and you leave it on the counter, you'll end up wasting a lot of flour because you'll have to feed it every day if it's on the counter. Otherwise, it'll die quite quickly. In the fridge, brings the temperature down. It will last about a week without being fed. So you don't need to feed as much.
I love it. It's like a pest.
Fred goes back in the...
Fred's gone back in the fridge now.
Fred the flour.
So we just give this a quick little mix because you don't want any of the starter to be kind of clumpy and lumpy. So you just mix it in with the water a little bit.
Until it's kind of just like a liquid, is it?
Until it basically looks like a milk. So that's it. So we'll zero that again. So what we're going to use is 200 grams of the strong white flour. And we're going to use 800 grams of the very strong flour. So here we go. We're at exactly... So we're a little bit more than a kilo there. So again, we just use the spoon, just take it a little bit out. Just till you're down to exactly 1,000.
Well, it's definitely not one of those. I mean, I know an awful lot of bakers say, you just throw in everything together. No, you don't.
No,
so not
like
this.
I mean, that's how I would cook. When I cook, if I cook in an omelette, if I'm cooking anything sauces, I'm like, I just judge everything by eye and I go by taste.
Yeah.
You can't, unfortunately, with baking.
That's because it's a science.
Baking is, and like anyone will tell you that, that works in the pastry section. Of all the sections, it's quite methodical and it's quite...
I'm going to help you guys.
You're really good
at
that.
What does it feel like, Sienna? Is it nice?
Yeah.
Squishy, is it?
Yeah.
Do you like baking?
Yeah.
Oh, obviously, when she has her hat on.
I think you like eating more than bacon, do you?
Yeah.
Do you like your daddy's bread?
Yeah, love it.
When did you start making the sourdough bread?
I think January of this year only. So I've only been baking less than a year. But because I've been cooking sort of my whole life, I always wanted to learn bread. And I mean, I've done breads from, you know, with packets of yeast and stuff. But sourdough, I always kind of found sourdough was... in my head, because a friend used to do it, he said it's so much hassle keeping your starter alive and stuff. Mm. It's actually so easy.
Well, I suppose if you make it all the time.
Well, if you're making it at least once
about,
a week. But even like at one point earlier in the year, I went to Poland and I actually just brought 50 grams of the starter in a little plastic container, because you're allowed less than 100 milligrams of liquid. And I just fed it as soon as I got to Poland, and I made bread for 3 weeks when I was in Poland, and then I brought it home.
Well,
so it can travel. Once it's not, like, it was only out at room temperature, you know, for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
So it was absolutely fine.
Well, our former colleague, Lena, lived out in the Solomon Islands, and she was saying when you went out there, because there was nowhere to get food or that, that's what somebody would give you a present of the starter, and then you'd make your own bread.
But I mean, if you think about it, like I can make 2 loaves of bread, a kilo of flour, some tap water, and I mean 20 grams of salt is all we're going to use. That's the only other ingredient, salt. And the only reason we use salt is just as a seasoning. Yeah. It doesn't actually affect, like you could make the bread without the salt and it wouldn't really affect how it rises or anything. But the salt itself just gives a nice sort of flavour to the bread. It's safe to use about 2%, which is about 20 grams per kilo of flour. You can up and down that. With the nigella seeds, I kind of do it by eye. So I just like nigella seed as a flavouring, but I'd often use rosemary. I can use some fennel. I'd like to make actually a caramelised onion bread soon, because I've always loved caramelised onion bread. But you can add anything, but you don't want to add too much weight. So something like nigella seeds, they only weigh a couple of grams, you know what I mean? They're not going to affect how your bread rises or anything.
And you're cooking with Sienna now, and baking with your kids. Like, this is becoming more popular as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, if your kid's only used to seeing packets of bread, I mean, that's what they think bread is. And unfortunately, like, the more we start looking at packets, and I worked in a bakery, a really good bakery as well for a while, you realise in a normal loaf of bread, there's about 35 or 36 ingredients. And there's stabilisers and E-numbers and preservatives is the main thing.
Yeah.
So you can have a loaf of bread sitting on the counter and it stays soft and lovely for like a week.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
If you put a slice of actual bread on the counter, sliced open, and left it to the air, it will be rock hard in a couple, the matter of an hour.
Yeah.
So I mean, bread shouldn't stay that soft and shouldn't stay like that. So when you think about it, most of what you're eating when you're eating that loaf of bread is chemical makeup. So that's mixed in now. So you basically just want, in this initial mix, just make sure all of it's scraped off our hands. And what you want to do is you just want to lift the bowl up.
Okay.
And you see the way there's some dry flour on the bottom?
Yeah.
So that's, you don't want that in the initial mix. So you just kind of get your hands to the bottom. So you want the entire mixture in together.
Yeah.
So you've got some wet dough there. You just cover it, and you always want to cover your dough when you're letting it to rest, because very, very quickly it will form a crust and it'll go kind of brown on top.
Yeah.
And then it becomes quite hard and it affects how you can knead your dough. So you just want to keep a gentle cover on it. And I mean, obviously small amounts of dough, it's going to stay in your hand. But you mean, you don't want it to every time you take your hands out, scrape off, you know, 10 or 20 milligrams of dough into a bin.
Yeah.
Because it's going to affect the final weight of your bread as well.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. I never really thought about that.
So we just cover that up, and then we leave that for about 8 to 10 minutes for the autolyse. And that'll just... You'll see when we come back to that, it's quite rough at the moment. When you come back to that after 10 minutes, you'll see it's kind of gone a little bit smoother. And it just makes it easier to work with. And what we'll do then is we'll add the final 50 grams of water with 20 grams of salt. We'll add a little bit of flavour in then, which is what I use... the nigella seeds, and then we knead it. There's a couple of techniques. The technique I was initially showed was you just do a very gentle knead, and then every half an hour for about 2 hours you fold the bread.
Okay.
So you basically just come in, it's almost like you don't have to knead it, so you just lift the bread and fold it. Or the other technique is when you finish this stage, you take it out and you knead it for sort of 7 to 10 minutes. And again, it depends. One thing I heard a guy say was, it's a lie to say you need the bread for 8 minutes, because you and me are going to need completely different strengths.
Absolutely,
I'm a lot taller. I'm a lot like, and you know, I'm bigger, so I'm just going to naturally, I'm going to need the bread harder. If I've been out working all day, I could come home, I could be wrecked tired, so I might put less effort in. You know, I might be talking to someone beside me.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, if you stand here and really go at it for 7 or 8 minutes, you probably need it perfectly. But if you're kind of busy, if you're talking, if you're maybe making the dinner, making a cup of tea, you mightn't need it as well. So there's tests to do, which I'll show you, that you basically stretch out the dough, and once the dough becomes like a window pane and you can see your hand behind it and it doesn't split, because if after 4 or 5 minutes you do it, you lift it up, and as soon as you lift it up, the weight of the dough will just tear and you know it's not ready.
Okay.
So you want it stretched out enough that when you take a small piece out and stretch it, it becomes almost like a window pane and you can see him behind it, and once it's at that, you know then. And then that's only the start. If that goes into a bowl then for at least 2 hours, so what I will do is I'll actually mark the side of the bowl where it sits after it's rested for a minute or two, and after 2 to 2.5 hours you want that to have doubled in size in the bowl.
Okay.
So you'll use a chalk marker and you'll just mark off on the bowl where it starts, and then when you get back and you it's kind of at least a 50% to 100% increase, so it's almost doubled in size in the bowl, you know it's kind of proved enough.
Cool.
You fold it out then, knock all the air out, and then you start to shape your bread. And once you've shaped it, could take anywhere between sort of 15 minutes to half an hour, depends how much you want to shape it and how much tension you want to get in the dough. we probably won't get a chance to see the shaping part today because it'll take this mm-hmm. evening before I'm doing that.
Well, you can send us some pictures.
I'll send you some pictures, and once you shape it then, you want to put it into your proven baskets that I showed you, and that could be at least another 2 hours in there. So you could do that to an hour to 2 hours on the counter, straight into an oven, or you, like I did with this loaf we're cooking today, into the fridge, and that could be anywhere between 8 and 16 hours. I mean, some people mature their dough in the fridge for 48 hours.
You're listening to No More Soggy Bottoms with Anna and Claire.
So Anne, who is your star baker this week?
Well, obviously I have to say Michael because he won it and he was absolutely amazing. But Henry was great again.
Henry, yeah.
I think he got the one of the slots there. He was the he got the technical bake.
Yes.
He did, yeah, he was first place. So he did really well and he's doing it. They're just you really see it in Bread Week, it kind of how clever they really are.
It really kind of like separates the men from the boys, doesn't it? It's that week where it's like you see their techniques.
Yeah, well, we saw the first handshake as well.
I
which
know, yeah,
Michael
brilliant.
Got the first handshake.
Yay.
I mean, to get a handshake
on
Bread
Week.
From Paul Hollywood would be like the pinnacle.
He's the king of bread.
Yeah, it's so interesting, but it is so interesting watching him judging the bread and everything about it. Like, it's so scientific and
I know.
He's very critical, but it's just, you could sit, like Prue kind of really takes a background
backseat
in that.
For that
backseat
one.
Because, you know, he's the totally the expert there.
I don't know how he can tell a bread is overproofed. Like, okay, I can kind of get overbaked, but overproofed, like, I don't even know what that means. Do you know what I mean? Like, would you be able to tell if a bread was over?
No. That's why when I actually made some buns this week and I was, people thought they were really nice, you know, but I said, I'd love Paul Hollywood to, like,
to
have a look at them and say,
how good are my baps?
You know, is that really good or just because it tastes okay? I mean, you know, I would really appreciate his I'd appreciate
input.
Your input, Paul.
Yeah, we're going to post you something.
Yeah, I should. But, I was watching I actually caught up with the extra slice last night. It was so good. And Paul Hollywood was one of the panel on it.
Yes,
and it was fascinating. And there was a lady in the audience. Yeah. You know, they have this thing where they show us your bakes.
Yeah.
And they all bring along baking. And this lady had, like, she obviously must have a shop that sells sourdough. But they gave a piece to Paul and he gave her the thumbs up first and then he got up and went down and gave her a handshake.
Oh my God, we should go in that audience.
Yeah, my life would be made up.
That would be amazing. I wonder how you do that. We must look that up.
Yeah, but they're really fun. The audience is fun and I just love that whole, show us your bakes.
And who do you think might have struggled this week, other than obviously Amelia's gone?
Amelia went out. There was a couple of them there that were sort of very mediocre at times. That they're soggy. Well, we didn't have a soggy bottom yet.
No.
But say the likes of Helena now had a very heavy sort of, her cauldron of pumpkins was kind of got a little bit of criticism, you know. Do you think her constant Halloween?
I think
Halloween
it's getting,
theme is getting
a little bit annoying. Because what happens after Halloween? Like I know Bake Off will be over by then, but like, what happens then? Like, does she do Halloween bakes at Christmas? Like, is there anything else to her baking? Like, can she do any other?
Well, her house is full of, like, she's got a really amazing house, but it's really quirky.
Yeah,
so
her house is amazing.
Yeah.
The pictures were online.
So that's her personality.
But I don't know. I think it's getting a bit old. Like, if I had, it's just say she gets a job as a baker afterwards and someone's like, I would love to get a fairy princess cake for my little girl.
Like, oh, don't do those.
I don't do them. I only do Halloween. I only do Halloween bakes. Like, it's a
just
little
a
bit
witch.
Of
a, she could have a witch.
Just a little bit of like a niche market, isn't it? You'd have to really love Halloween to want to go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it's bad. Like, her bakes
no,
look
she's
good.
Quirk. She's
but,
quirky.
You know.
But it's interesting that she does it every single week. She comes up with something.
Like, I think if I was a judge now, I'd be like, okay, now it's time to move on. Let's get something else, you know.
Well, how much did you think you thought Michael really deserved?
Yeah,
didn't
Michael
he?
Is so nice as well.
He's really funny.
He's really nice. Yeah, he's really cute. And he was in shock. And I was looking at some of their Instagrams as well over the weekend. It's funny how they're all kind of like hanging out with each other to watch it. And there was a picture and they're all like bowing to Michael on Instagram. And they're like, oh, he's like the king this week. So they're bowing to him. So I thought that was really cute. I've loved Alice since the beginning. I think she's really good. But it, like, And they were like really critical of her this week, and like it was almost to the point where she was in the bottom three.
Yeah, I know.
And
yeah,
she was star baker the week before.
But that happens, you know. Sometimes I wonder, do they just purposely put them down?
Because I was like, I didn't, from looking at her bakes and looking from the comments when they were just going around tasting the stuff, I didn't think she was in the bottom three. I thought she was like happily in the middle.
Well, she got on the extra slice there. She got loads of TV time because she's brilliant.
She's brilliant. And first of all, she looks good on camera. She's got a nice personality and she seems to be good at what she's doing. So she'll go far.
Well, she should go far. We'll see how that. Mind you, they're having this dairy week.
I know.
This is the first time. It's kind of,
I don't even know what a dairy bake is. Is that like cheesecake?
Well, I suppose cheesecake, you could say. I think panna cotta is which I really dislike. And I'm kind of hoping they'd maybe use maybe buttermilk scones or something like that.
Yeah, maybe that, yeah.
But I think there was a little bit of spoiler there that they're going back to some sort of ancient bake. That's probably pretty gross, you know.
It probably sounds a bit gross. I don't know how I feel about the idea of dairy week. It's a bit... Well, I get it. Okay, it's obviously a type of baking. But in a way, like, have we moved on from just baking with dairy? Because isn't there dairy in most bakes anyway?
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't understand why there's a particular emphasis on dairy week.
For some reason, it sounds nasty.
Yeah, I know. It sounds like it's kind of gross.
Kind of retro a little
like
bit.
Like, it's a creme brulee kind of bake.
I don't like creme brulee. Yes, it is, because it's a custard. Custards.
I like custard.
No. And I wouldn't be a fan of creme brulee. I'd never order it.
Oh, I would. I think that's really nice thing. But what, like, you know, like, I understand vegan week because that's trendy. But I'm not sure dairy week is trendy.
Well, they're obviously trying to mix it up and bring in something new all the time. Yeah. They don't really have to do that. Do you know what I mean?
They definitely don't.
There's enough originality every week. Without bringing in new things, they definitely don't.
No, they don't.
I enjoyed Vegan Week because I do know some vegans and I learnt stuff.
Yeah.
I really learnt some stuff that I still use.
But even in terms of Vegan Week, it was handy even if you had, like, just say, someone who's lactose intolerant, that you could make them something as well, which is important. So you don't necessarily have to be vegan to appreciate it.
Yeah, well, it's learning as well what you can replace stuff with.
Yeah.
I mean, so many people saying intolerant to eggs and things like that. And sure, I mean, it's only when you go into vegan cooking you realise you can replace eggs in baking.
Yeah.
Because I would never have thought you could do that.
Yeah,
But you can. You can use other things. And... Yeah, I mean, I learned to make pavlova with...
You were saying the chickpeas, wasn't
it? Chickpea juice, the aquafaba, I think is what they call it. And you can whip that up like you do egg white and it'll...
And it'll be vegan.
Now, there's a slight little taste of chickpea off there.
But that's a really light chickpeas.
There's sugar in it. It reacts the same, it looks the same, and it's really... I thought it was amazing. I'd never heard. I was always throwing that away and I kind of thought I should store it and make a lot of
a lot of stuff. So we'll go back to Gavin's kitchen now, where the bake that's in the oven, the sourdough that's in the oven, is just about ready.
So there's the 22 minute timer. So what we'll do now is we'll just take the lid off and then we'll put a timer back on for 12 minutes. And that will just...
And that's the steaming process you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, so it's been steamed now basically inside the... It's called a Dutch oven, but it's basically a cast iron stew pot is what we'd call it. It's called a Dutch oven in America. First time someone told me to get a Dutch oven, I thought I had to buy a brand new oven.
Yeah, well,
that's what I would think too.
So you just pop the lid off.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
So you can see the way it's all split open.
Yeah.
And you can see the crust in there. So you want to get that closed. And temperature about the same, about 200, 220 degrees. For 12 minutes. So that's, you can see how pale in colour that was. It was kind of, it was nice, like it was golden, but it was pale. Right. So when that comes out, technically if you wanted, within maybe 15, 20 minutes, you could cut into it and try a slice. But because there's still so much heat and steam in it, it's still cooking. So if you cut it open too early, what will happen is it will get quite gummy and quite sticky. So you want it to kind of cool down for almost 2 to 3 hours before you will actually take a slice out of it. Now we often... don't have anywhere near that patience to wait.
Do you cover it while it's cooling down or just leave it?
No, because what happens is if you cover it with a cloth, as the steam's rising, it'll catch on the cloth and it'll basically turn your crust completely soggy. So instead of a soggy bottom, you'll have a soggy top. So no, what I will do is the rack on the bottom.
Yeah.
I'll just take that out onto the counter and I'll just sit it on a cooling rack. So again, it's not touching a surface, because if it touches a flat surface, the condensation will cause steam. And that will, again, so that would actually cause the bottom to go soggy if you left the bread sitting on the counter. So you just leave it on a cooling rack, or you could even say turn a bowl like this upside down so it's only a small surface and sit your bread on top of it if you didn't have a cooling rack. Which you can improvise with anything really. And yeah, leave it for about 2 hours, and then once you slice into it, it should be perfect. So I already have pre-measured out 20 grams of salt. I mean, you can just use, absolutely, you can just use,
well, that's different.
You can use table salt, but that's Maldon salt, yeah. The better salt you use, obviously, the better flavour. If you use a cheap table salt, it's going to be really, really strong. If so, it's 20 grams of that compared to 20 grams of this,
it's a bit different.
It's not going to be as pleasant. This dissolves nice and evenly.
I only recently discovered Maldron salt, and I'd never realised. I mean, it is amazing. It's totally different to ordinary salt.
For me, you don't use it either in the same way as you would use normal salt. Like if I'm just putting salt water in a pan, like, or a pot of water for pasta, obviously you're just going to use Saxo or you're going to use table salt. But that's what I would call, and a lot of chefs would call, a finishing salt. So like when you're just sprinkling some on top of a salad or some meat. Mm. You can pick that up, right, and eat a flake of it, and it's really tasty. Like, yeah. if you put that amount of salt, table salt, in your mouth, you'd make that face, yeah. and you'd be looking for water. Whereas, I mean, obviously, it's still salty, but it's a much more pleasant,
yeah,
and the texture. Like, if you actually put that, say, on a lettuce leaf or a little bit of meat, and you actually get that crunch, the bite of the salt, it actually adds a texture as well as a flavour to the food. I'm just gonna grab kettle for 1 second, because just boiling water helps. So we already put 600 grams of water in, so we're going to put an extra 50 into this,
and you mix that with the salt.
Yeah, so that's, now again, because I'm using the extra strong bread flour, I may, just by looking at it, need to add another maybe 20 grams of water a little bit later on if I find it's a little bit too tight. But this 650 is absolutely perfect when I'm using the organic bread flour. So I'm just kind of scrunching that salt up just a tiny bit, just because you don't want loads of crystals going on top of your bread. So all of a sudden, even though it looked like it was quite dry, mm-hmm. now you can see there's quite a lot of water in that. So you just kind of mix that in. And before you take it out of the bowl, now some people will mix it by hand in the bowl. I find you probably just don't get as much of a need on it when it's in the bowl. And also, in this particular bowl, there's a little bit of sharp plastic on the bottom, so I don't like doing that, because you kind of catch your hand on
it. It's quite squishy now.
Yeah.
It's quite squishy. Now that, once I need that, the water will go in, and you'll see quite quickly it takes that kind of smooth, shiny. At the moment, it looks quite sticky. So what we do is we turn that out onto the counter. And what I would often do now is, if you just want to scrape out any wet bits from inside, I would often set a timer for 8 minutes. What that does is just gives me a guide, because they say 7 to 8 minutes kneading is what's needed.
Yeah.
I'll know by the texture of it whether it's ready, but 7-8 minutes, kind of, sometimes when you're caught talking to someone, you could be kneading it for 15 minutes and not even realise.
Mm-hmm.
So you just want to...
So, you're kind of wrapping it back.
So you basically, yeah, so you push it out.
Push it out.
Catch your fingers around the back, and you sort of fold it back in on itself. So you're kind of bring it back into a ball. Now, at the moment, it's not going to take much of a shake because it's quite wet, and you can also... So if you just slam it on the counter, that's basically just spreading out.
So if you're angry, that's a good way.
If you're angry, yeah.
Right.
So one baker in Greystones...
Scares me, Daddy.
One baker in Greystones says, just pretend it's someone you don't like and just get to work on it. Really put your... So you're using the flat of your pan, and you're pushing in.
Yeah.
So you're basically... What you want to do is you basically want to stretch the gluten inside it.
Do you feel a lot healthier and better since you started eating your own bread? Does it make a difference, would you say?
I think if I ate the same amount of regular bread, or the same amount of this bread as I did regular bread, it probably would. But because it's so nice, I say we probably tend to eat, like, once a loaf is made and it's so good fresh.
Yeah,
sometimes I find you'll eat 4 or 5 slices, you know, with just a little bit of butter on it. And you'd never do that with just a normal slice pan, because it's not that tasty. Do you know what I mean? You might have a couple of slices of toast at night, or, you know, if you're hungry. So, as a rule with eating, it's about calorie intake. So even if it's better for you, even if there's less
bad ingredients, if you still eat loads of it, you're still going to put on weight.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's better for, it's certainly better for your gut health.
There you go.
Perfect timing.
Okay, so you can see it's
That's beautiful.
Taking the colour now. So we will just
be careful, Sienna. It's hot around
tea towel.
Here.
Where's the other tea towel? Oh, there it is.
Yeah, sorry, Sienna.
So we're going to take this out.
Just be careful you don't get burned.
So again, you want to be very careful, because the first few times I did this, I touched either the inside of the oven or I touched the actual Dutch oven itself. And I mean, you'll give yourself a second degree burn. Like, I mean, it's that's almost 300 degrees, that metal. I mean, if I poured water into that now, even if I filled that half, it would instantly boil. Do you know, and it would completely steam up. So you do want to be careful with it. But you can touch it now on the top. And then sort of a quick test, a knock test. And you can hear it's completely hollow. Yeah. If that was a kind of more of a thud, more of a dull sound, you'd notice the moisture inside.
But and you can kind of pop that back in then, could you, if it was?
Oh yeah, I mean, if you felt it was too dense, if it wasn't cooked, yeah, absolutely. But I mean, if you put that in for much, much longer now, you can see the way it's starting to catch now. It's starting to turn nice and
crispy.
Slightly dark brown on the outside. Another 5 minutes in there, that would have been completely charred on the outside. But remember,
I
watched a program recently with Michel Roux Jr. and he went to France and he was talking to like the best bakers who make the baguettes and stuff, and he said, you know good bread because it sings. So when this cools now in the next 2 or 3 minutes, you'll hear it starting to crack. And even like when you do this, you know that noise?
Gorgeous.
But you'll hear that starting to crack now on its own. When we put that on a cooling rack, it'll start to make that noise naturally, and you'll hear it in the background. It's such a nice sound.
But it's definitely worthwhile having that little pot to give it all that lovely texture.
It just holds the shape. And essentially all the basket is doing, because when bread proves, it expands. That's all it's doing is growing. So if you put it on a flat counter, it will grow out and it will grow slightly up. But generally, because it's easier, it will like water. If you pour water somewhere, it'll take the
shape.
It'll take the easiest route. So if you put bread like a soft dough like this on a counter, the easiest route to spread is out. Whereas if you put it in a shaping basket, it can't go any further left or right, so it has to naturally go up. So you're just basically encouraging it to rise up. So you can see that's already kind of taken a decent shape. So another three, four minutes of kneading, and I'll show you the technique I was talking about to see if it looks like a pane of glass.
I like that splat.
Yeah, it sounds great.
But I mean, even if you want to touch it now, you can feel the difference between, like, you can kind of...
Yeah. What does that feel like, Sienna?
Squishy.
Is it squishy?
It's nice. A little sticky, nice.
And the reason, actually, so that mark there, the reason, like, it's called a baker's mark or baker's signature. The reason they used to put those marks on, apparently, is back in the day, in a village, everyone would make their own bread, but there'd only be one oven in the town.
Okay.
So you would drop your 6 or 7 loaves and each person would have a specific mark, because one person would be baking everything and he'd just throw them all out of the cooling racks, so you would know which is your bread when you arrived. By the mark you've put on it. So, hands are a little sticky, but if you just get a little bit of water on your hands, stretch it out. So see the way it's gone quite thin, but see the way it's already 2 big holes splitting it?
Yeah.
So you know straight away that's not where you want it to be. And also you'll know, see the way it's kind of still a little bit doughy?
Mm-hmm.
It's not got a smooth texture on it. So you know that needs another probably 2 minutes of kneading. So for me, you can see that's pretty much ready there. And what I will do, I use kind of like a mixture of the two techniques. I will actually fold this now as well. So I'm going to put this back into the bowl. And in a half an hour, I'll fold it. And in a half an hour again, I'll fold it again. And then I'll let it sit and double in size. So you just pick it up and you pop it back into the bowl. Again, scrape your hands. And really importantly, especially when it's like this wet, is to cover it quickly. And you'll hear the noise now when we kind of...
Oh, that's fantastic.
The lovely crack it makes when it's
beautiful.
Nice and hollow as well.
You're listening to No More Soggy Bottoms with Anna and Claire.
So that sourdough was amazing, Anne, wasn't it?
It was fantastic. Well, I think it was the best slice of bread I've ever eaten in my life.
It was so good. And even just like sitting back at Gavin's house with Sienna and his wife Marlena and just having like a cup of tea and a slice of bread with just butter on it. It was just...
It was gorgeous.
This is so nice and
now,
lovely.
The only thing I will say, I didn't think it was easy.
I didn't think it was easy either.
Yeah, I was kind of looking at it and saying, that's hard. Technical.
But I think, as Gavin said, you make it a couple of times and it becomes easy.
Well, the thing is, you make it a certain way and you cannot do it any other way.
And that's it. And I think he has it down to a T where he's like, okay, I'm going to make three of these this week. And he just knows how to do it and he throws the bread together.
Yeah.
Whether it's for someone who's starting out, it's really hard to be like, how do I make this? Because there's so many different aspects to it. But if you're in a routine and you've done it once or twice, I think you just pick it up. And he was saying that he had, when off air, I suppose, he was saying that he had a baker come to his house and teach him how to make this bread. And he thought he'd only be here for a few hours.
Yeah.
He was there all day because it's such a long process, like 12, 14 hours to make a...
Yeah, I suppose. Well, this was when this loaf was perfect.
Yeah, no, like, it was so good.
To look at, though, you could just, it was like a work of art, really, the way it was scored.
Scores and everything.
You know, he used the
technique for scoring.
Yeah, that was fascinating. And just the way it came out. And he had the special bowl for it and the Dutch oven, the lot, you know.
Yeah.
But it was hot as well. Hot,
yeah,
hot,
you had to be very careful making
so,
it.
Yeah, it's not
very, very careful. Isn't he saying that he kind of like tipped off before and it got, you get a nasty burn?
Yeah, no, you have a really hot oven, and that Dutch oven as well.
Yeah.
I don't think you necessarily have to have one of those.
He was saying about the steam. You could put water in a tray, but it depends on the type of oven you have, because it could affect the elements in your oven. So you just have to be careful. So maybe if you are making that bread, go buy yourself a Dutch oven, because it makes life easier, apparently, and get yourself a nice bowl to make it shaped perfectly. Back to Bake Off. We haven't discussed the contestants as much this week, but we had a really good special because Gavin went through the whole lot of that sourdough. So let's go back to giving him a score out of 10.
Okay, we're going alphabetically then. Alice had a terrible week this week. So
but
she,
I really
she,
like her.
What are you going to give her?
Should we give her a 6?
Yeah, I think so. She has to be marked down a little bit. Amelia obviously gets a 0 because she went out. Yeah. Loved her. She was really good on the extra slice.
Scribble her out.
I'll scribble her face out here like
Bye.
I do. Goodbye, Amelia. You were wonderful.
You were so
She was so
lovely.
Quirky. She's only 24.
I loved her hair. I loved the pink at the end of it.
She was great. And she was super. She had a super night on the extra slice.
Yeah, and her accent. She's a gorgeous kind of Yorkshire accent. She was just a really nice girl. Actually, you know what? They're all lovely. So, you know.
So then we'll go skip Dan because he's gone. Yeah. Then David he did the tribal mask thing.
He did, and they kind of burst a little bit, didn't they?
Yeah, so that's...
And it was the type of bread, wasn't it?
Flaw. So David has to be... He'll bounce back. Give him a 6 as well.
A 6, okay.
Are you going to go? I'm really mean, aren't I?
We'll give
Helena, are we going to be really mean to Helena because we're
sick of Halloween.
Yeah, okay.
So, we're bah humbug for Halloween.
So we'll give her a 5.
5.
Okay. Yeah. We'll see what she comes up with. Can you really come up with sort of spooky stuff with Dairy Week, I wonder?
I've gone off milk.
Henry, oh my God. He didn't do great in the Showstopper, but he did really well and everything else. Yeah. So he has to get a really high score.
You only want to give him a really high score because you really like him.
I do. He's a choir boy.
His
little
choir
face.
Boy.
And he's so young. He's the youngest there now.
He's
only 20.
Will we give him a 7?
God, okay.
Or an 8. Do you want to give him
an
8?
I want to give him an 8.
Okay,
yeah.
I'll give him an 8. So.
Okay, so Michael has to get... I mean, he is going through the roof.
Yeah, I think because he's a star baker, he needs to get a 10. And he got the first handshake, so should we give him an 11, even though we do it out of 10, but just because he got the first handshake.
Well, are you making all the rules? Okay, you can.
We scrap my rule. I just thought he got a handshake.
No,
and
he did.
Star baker.
He went through the roof, to be
he
honest.
Really
he did,
good.
Yeah. So he has to get an 11.
Who else is
Michelle,
there?
Great week. Another. Yeah. She was star baker the first week, wasn't she?
She's really good.
Sure, she's really good. So she has to get an 8 or a 9.
What do you want to give her?
I'll give her an 8 because I'm looking at Phil here. He did very well.
He did.
Phil is the oldest contestant. He's 56. So I think I'm all on his side. So he has to get a good. He did really well, actually.
Yeah.
So can we give him an 8 or a 9?
We can give him an 8 or a 9. Which one would you like to give him?
I'll give him a 9.
I'm being less bossy now. Did you see what I'm doing? I'm not making all the rules.
Oh, I'll never live this down now.
So we have Priya.
Priya.
good. She's a dark horse. She's going to be in the final, I think.
I think so. I think she's going to do really well.
She's quietly confident. Mm-hmm. And I.
She's just steady, isn't she? She never has a bad week.
Yeah.
She's not a star baker yet. Yeah. She's just like a nice, happy medium, isn't she? She's really good. What we give her?
I suppose an 8 or a 9.
I'd give her an 8.
Yeah, because she's really good. Yeah. I'm looking at her scores there on from the Showstoppers, etc.
Rosie. Oh, okay. Rosie is getting... I think Rosie is getting better.
Yeah, as Sarah there is saying, good scoring there.
Yeah, she's got good scoring. I think, I still feel terrible about what I said. She's a pet snake and no one should like her anymore. Seems like she's lovely.
Well, then you mark her up more.
And it was funny because they were talking about, you know, the way like she's got like the injections and stuff for the animals.
I know.
And then she's like, she uses them to like inject stuff into buns. You know, the way you
I
do
know,
that.
I saw her
do it.
I
was like, that's gas. Well, I was like, we like her now. So we give her a 7.
Ah, yeah. Well, she can resurrect herself this week. All right. Set perfectly. Okay. And then little Steph.
She's lovely.
Oh, she's fantastic.
She's really nice. She did well.
Cute as a button. She only looks about 17. She's 28. But yeah, she's great. I mean, she did that. Oh, it was overbaked, actually. Her signature bake was a little bit overbaked. But she did very good on the Showstopper.
Yeah. So we give her an 8?
Yeah.
I think, I know it sounds really funny, but I think I'd prefer something to be overbaked than underbaked because I hate that gooey.
Oh, yeah.
So, to me, being slightly overbaked isn't the biggest criticism.
I think that came up last night, actually, with Paul Hollywood in the extra slice. He said overbaked.
Overbaked. Like, and I know it's just safer, isn't it? Because, you know, gooey stuff. It's a bit meh. Yeah. Okay, let's do a prediction of who do you think would be star baker for Dairy Week? I know it's a really hard one to
call.
It
could be really random, but I think Phil could do it because I suppose he might have been around with milk puddings and stuff like that because he's older.
Yeah.
I just think the likes of Mike, I don't think the younger people
will know what it is.
Will understand if it's going to be like really old-fashioned baking. I don't know. I'm not really, we're both, I think,
not
mystified
really
as
sure.
to what milk or dairy week
is.
Yeah,
I just really want to know what they're going to make. Is it going to actually be...
I think it's going to be somebody different from you know, not the main players there. I think it's that might be
different.
Phil that might get the best
okay,
this
so
week.
We'll go for Phil.
I'm going to go for Phil. And then they might, do you think they'll put two people out could go out on Dairy Week? Because they were,
the week.
Yeah, there is one week where two people are going out.
It'll probably be tonight.
So that'll be very sad, but. Well, you have to think about it.
Exactly.
Make our job easier.
It does, because it's very hard to remember the one at the moment. So if you want to get in contact with the podcast, you can join the No More Soggy Bottoms Facebook page. It's a Facebook group. You can join us and you can share our recipes and you can see pictures and articles and different things. And we hope you enjoy the bake-off.
Yay. Yeah, looking forward to tonight.
Yes.
You're listening to No More Soggy Bottoms with Anna and Claire.